We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, June 27th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, we'll hear about the 4th of July concert featuring Taku Winds and the Juno Volunteer Marching Band. We'll also get details on the Southeast Alaska Cornhole Tournament. JPD will highlight police deployment and general safety this 3rd and 4th of July, and Juno Makerspace will be here to talk about their new location and drone and quadcopter meetup. Those interviews, plus national native news, bird note, music, and more coming up right here on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather. Scattered rain showers today, highs around 60 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy with isolated rain showers and lows around 50. National native news is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native organizations, advocates, and attorneys are seeking to close gaps in the 2013 Violence Against Women Act, which is set to expire this year. Advocates say its reauthorization is significant in helping address the high rates of violence against Native women. Statistics by the National Institute of Justice show more than 4 in 5 American Indian and Alaska Native women have experienced violence in their lifetime. A provision in the law grants tribes jurisdiction over non-Natives in incidents of domestic violence, but it does not apply to sexual assault, stalking, or trafficking. Child abuse is also left out. Virginia Davis is a senior policy advisor with the National Congress of American Indians.
In particular, one of the things we've seen from the now 20 tribes that are exercising jurisdiction over non-Indians is that domestic violence is frequently co-occurring with child abuse. And when children are being victimized, those cases still can't be charged in tribal court. They're still falling through the cracks. The same thing with our tribal law enforcement officers. Unfortunately, domestic violence calls are some of the most dangerous calls they receive. And when they respond to the scene, they may be assaulted by the alleged abuser. And when that happens in Indian country, the tribe has no jurisdiction to charge the non-Indian for the assault against the tribal police officer. And that's just creating a situation that's fundamentally unsafe.
Native organizations, tribes, and advocates are working with U.S. lawmakers to get expanded jurisdiction and are seeking to secure funding.
Just given the way federal Indian policy works, it has plays a huge and outsized role, really, in the daily lives of Native people. And one of the root causes of the problem, the high rates of victimization that we're seeing in Indian country, are the restrictions that federal law places on our tribal governments, our local governments. And so it's incredibly important that we engage with Congress on these issues.
Davis provided a legislative update Tuesday to attendees at the Women Are Sacred Conference in Albuquerque. Advocates, survivors, justice personnel, tribal leaders and youth from across the country are gathered in New Mexico this week to address ending violence against Native women. The U.S. Department of Justice formally announced a $110 million fund to help crime victims in Indian country. Justice officials say the Crime Victims Fund will be distributed as grants to eligible tribes and tribal organizations. Mary Daly is the opioid coordinator for the U.S. Deputy Attorney General's office. She says the money will help offset some of the ways Native Americans and Alaska Natives are disproportionately affected by crime.
The fiscal year 2018 Tribal Victim Services set aside program can be used to provide a wide range of victim services for victims of human trafficking, crime victimization related to the opioid and drug crisis, child abuse and neglect, domestic violence, homicide, and assault, among other crimes.
Daly made the announcement at a law enforcement training conference Tuesday in Albuquerque, aimed to fighting drug trafficking in Indian country. 3 of 4 remains of Native children from the Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania have been returned home. Pennsylvania Live reports the Army National Military Cemeteries recently transferred the remains to tribes in a private ceremony. The remains, disinterred earlier this month, are Northern Arapaho, Blackfeet, and Oglala Lakota. A team is reportedly continuing to identify a 4th child. The National Indian Gaming Commission Tuesday released gross gaming revenue for 2017, showing an increase of 3.9% over the previous year, totaling $32.4 billion. The revenues are calculated from financial statements of 494 gaming operations owned by more than 240 tribes. 2018 marks 30 years of gaming under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. Gaming tribes say the industry is a vital part of economic growth and tribal self-determination. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Support by AARP. What we do might surprise you, like sponsoring American Indian Days in Browning, Montana, July 12th through the 18th. Information at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are Sarah McNair Grove and Todd Hunt. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Shelley.
You're welcome. And you're here representing Juno Community Bands to talk about the upcoming concert. But I wanted to ask first, what is Juno Community Bands and what's your role there?
Okay, I'm the president of Juno Community Bands, and it is an organization that was started formally probably about 10 years ago to provide a place for adult woodwind and brass and percussion players to play an ensemble music together. Yep.
And you're the president, but are you also an instrument player?
I also play. I play clarinet, yes.
And how about you, Todd? What's your role there?
I am the conductor of the Taku Winds, which is one of the subsets, I guess, of the Juno Community Bands, which is – we would mostly know Juno Community Bands as the Taku Winds or the marching band that happens in the 4th of July parades.
Well, Sarah said off the record you're also the artistic director.
Yeah.
Is that a new
title?
I just
got a promotion. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Heard it here first on a Juno Afternoon. And you play instruments too, of course.
I do, yeah.
What
yeah.
instruments
I had
are your
my,
specialties?
I did my undergrad in saxophone, so I have a degree in saxophone performance, and I also picked up clarinet, flute, and bassoon along the way, and depending on I don't know where you've seen me play. Depends on maybe what you think of me as. But saxophone is my main instrument. But I've done a lot with the others. Just a woodwind guy, I guess.
You seem like you're qualified.
I don't know.
Yeah, we think he's qualified.
Okay, so as you mentioned, the Juno Community Bands has a couple of subsets, and you named those already. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering how many participants or how many members do you have in the Juno Community Bands overall?
I think it varies depending upon what we're doing and who's available. In the Taku Winds, which is our sort of formal wind ensemble concert band, we can have anywhere from 30 to 40 players. This concert is probably a little bit smaller. We've got 30 people travel in the summertime. Mm-hmm. The Juno Volunteer Marching Band, again, varies depending upon we've had anywhere from 25 to 40 people. So just depends who shows up at the parade. We never know until parade morning.
So exciting.
If you are a player and want to join us at the parade, show up on parade morning down by the bridge, and we'd love to have you.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah. That was going to be one of the questions I asked later. How do we join?
Yeah.
But for
Very
now.
Easy. Yeah, show up.
Show up with your instrument. So you guys have a performance coming up, and I think it's really going to help everyone get into the spirit for the 4th of July.
Yeah, I think so. So it's a 4th of July Pops concert that's on June 30th, I guess. I was sort of disappointed it wasn't in actually July, but, you know, that's fine because it's the weekend leading up to it. It's music by all American composers, most of which I think you'll have heard of and whatnot, but it's all energetic, exuberant stuff. Lots of fun music.
And I wanted to ask another question about the Juno Volunteer Marching Band because I've heard about the Taku Winds. And the marching band, though, I'm a little bit more unfamiliar with. Do they just get together for parades or do they do other events as well?
It gets together once a year simply for the Juno and Douglas parades.
All right. So the Pops concert is something additional.
Yeah. Historically, the Juno Volunteer Marching Band has been in the parades and had two concerts in the park, usually at Marine Park, a couple of days before the 4th. And the last 2 years we decided, simply because weather, a couple times we've gotten rained out in our concerts in the park, that we would try a little bit more formal Pops-type concert. And so this is the second year doing that. So it really is an outgrowth of what the Juno Volunteer Marching Band has been doing for the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And back to the concert coming up on the 30th, which is Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday evening.
What are some of your favorite patriotic songs that you like to hear around this time of year?
Oh, gosh.
Well, I think everybody's favorite has to be Sousa, Stars and Stripes.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say it.
But other than that one,
gosh,
we
and
do
I wonder
have...
if that'll be on the concert or not.
But we do have some other fun ones on the concert.
Oh, yeah.
What else will we hear?
So, actually, one piece I might want to highlight a little bit is a piece by Robert Jagger called Esprit de Corps, which is, I don't know, it's kind of like a fast march or whatever, but the themes are based off of the Marine hymn, which is actually kind of a nice little connection to some patriotism and whatnot. So it's super fun and energetic piece, but it's also got that, oh, but this, I've never heard this before, but this sounds familiar. And I think there's a lot of that happening in the concert, too. We've got a also a piece by Charles Ives called Variations on America, which... you know, is taking the tune America and messing around with it for about 8 or 10 minutes, which is really fun to hear the different ways that he treats it from like, you know, a typical sort of patriotic style to something almost sad to like a Spanish march to this and that. It's
like a
medley. Totally fascinating. Yeah, it's like a medley, but with
the same song
melody over and over again. Yeah,
cool. Actually, I think that sounds really nice.
Mm-hmm.
and I have Esprit de Corps to play at the end of the interview here, so our listeners will get to hear it. Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So you said. You are accepting new members into the community band. How does one get involved if they're a musician and they want to be a part of it?
If you want to join us on the 4th in the Juno Volunteer Marching Band, you can actually just show up down at the bridge about 9 o'clock on the morning of the 4th and find us. We are going to be playing four marches, Military Escort, National Emblem, Stars and Stripes, and Washington and Post. If you want music ahead of time, you can contact us at our email, which is junocommunityband@gmail.com. And I can get music to you. We are also having a rehearsal for the marching band on Monday evening, July 7th at 7 o'clock. So people who want to get out and practice marching a little bit can join us then, too.
Yeah. And where's that?
Oh, that's at Faith Lutheran Church.
Okay. Yeah.
To join Talk Who Wins, it's a little bit more formal process. Mm-hmm. I will say we are what I call a semi-auditioned group. You either need to know somebody who knows what your ability is to play, or Todd will listen to, or one of our other members will listen. But we are always looking for members, so if you think you're interested, again, you can contact us at our email, and we'll be happy to see what we can do.
Juno Community Band or bands at gmail.com?
Singular. Band.
Band. Juno Community Band @gmail.com.
Yeah, a little bit confusing. Yeah.
And all the songs that you selected for the Pops concert on the 30th, those are easy songs, easy to play, you said?
Well, some are easy, some are not, as you'll
not
hear.
Not as easy as
Esprit
you expected.
Esprit de Corps was, well, I mean, I kind of knew what I was getting into, but I don't know. It's hard. It's like, oh, this would be a great one to have, like Esprit de Corps. Like, oh, I've got to do that. Oh, it's going to be great. It's like, oh, right. Yeah, it's kind of hard. So there's actually quite a mix of, you know, relatively simple pieces, but also it's pushing the envelope for us a little bit because with this concert, we have an abbreviated rehearsal process because the summer end of the school year gets really busy. So we try to make it as, you know, quick as we can to, but it's going to be good because we've been working really hard.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the musicians appreciate the challenge a little bit.
I think so.
It is fun. It's fun to play the easy ones that you can play through once or twice and play it well. But then it's also, you need that challenge to say, I've got to work on this and get good at it. So it's been lots of fun.
All right. So the concert is June 30th, 7 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. There's a small admission fee. Tickets are available in advance. You said you can get those through the JAC website and bendini.com, as well as at the door. And more information at junocommunityband.org and on Facebook. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't think so.
Don't think so. Just come to the concert. I think it'll be a great beginning to the 4th of July celebrations.
I think so, too. Like I said, it's really going to get everybody in the spirit.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Thanks for being here today, Todd and Sarah.
Thank you.
And
thanks, Shelley.
Esprit de Corps by the U.S. Marine Band.
At the APK presents author Daniel Lee Henry on Thursday, June 28th. In his new book, Across the Shaman's River, John Muir, the Tlingit Stronghold, and the Opening of the North, he explores Muir's relationship to Alaska and its people. It builds from Muir's unpublished journals and the author's interviews with Tlingit elders. On Thursday, June 28th at 5:30 p.m., join Henry at the APK State Library Archives and Museum for a presentation about the creation of the book.
It is about 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Charlie Harrington. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. You're a part of the Downtown Business Association. Tell us a little bit about them and what's your role there.
I am a DBA board member, and we are an organization that is intended to foster and cultivate a sense of downtown and support small and local businesses.
Today you're here to talk about the Southeast Alaska Cornhole Tournament. Cornhole is actually one of my favorite games to play. So I was wondering if you would like to play a little bit of cornhole trivia with me today.
I would love to.
All right.
And just so we, right off the bat, the tournament is this Saturday.
Okay, great. We will get to all the details,
okay,
I promise. Okay, first question. What are the dimensions of a cornhole bag?
Cornhole bag, okay. I'm going to say 6x6.
Correct.
Excellent.
Second question, one for one. What should they be filled with?
Corn kernels, usually. However, it's so rainy up here, we have official American Cornhole Organization approved bags that have synthetic beads.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
Well, that is correct. They are officially supposed to be filled with dried corn kernels, but it sounds like you got a little bit of a
an
official alternate version.
Yeah, 2 years ago when we did the tournament in Marine Park, it was a little bit wet, and some of the corn kernels started to expand. And by the end of the tournament, the bags weren't fitting in the hole as they normally should. So we're going another way this year.
That's really funny. I had no idea. Okay. Two for two. Third question. How many feet apart should the bottoms of the platforms be placed?
27 feet.
Exactly right. Question four. A bag in the hole scores how many points?
Three. 3 points.
Correct. You're 4 for 4 so far. One on the platform scores 1 point and 21 points to win. Is that how you guys play?
Correct. Indeed.
Okay. Last question, possibly the hardest. Where is the American Cornhole Association located?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to guess Ohio. I'm going to say Cincinnati, Ohio.
That is absolutely correct. You're 5 for 5. Way to go.
Listeners to know that I was not given any of these questions previously. I asked for them, and yep. She refused.
That's right. Well, you got a perfect score. And also, just additional information, according to the great Wikipedia, the west side of Cincinnati, Ohio, specifically Harrison, Ohio, has been one of the main areas of modern resurgence and renewed popularity of the game.
Do you know when it was invented? Did it say around there?
There's some vague history. I don't think they have an official "it was invented on" date. It seems like it was pretty popular in the Chicago area in the 60s and the 70s, and it kind of spread through northern Indiana. But it was really when, like, those folks in Cincinnati started playing it and brought it back that it really, like, took on this nationwide craze that we have now.
Yeah, it's on ESPN these days.
I know,
I can't believe it.
It says that, too. Throughout the Midwest, has become a nationwide favorite with national championships covered on ESPN. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, thanks. That
and
was great.
And then the one piece of trivia I couldn't find out is why it's called cornhole. Possibly because the corn in the bags, but I'm not sure I really want to know.
Yeah, I think that we don't want to dive too far into that. I've been getting a lot of surly interviews, I guess, for lack of a better word, about that. But it's just a name, and there's corn in the bags, usually not in Alaska, and there's a hole on the board. And the goal is to throw the corn bags in the hole, make as many points as possible.
All right. Well, now that everyone knows all about the game, would you please tell us about the Southeast Alaska Cornhole Tournament?
Absolutely. So it's a fundraising event for the Downtown Business Association, and we're going to use all the money raised to help pay for our events. Our most famous event is Gallery Walk, and then also we are looking into some more downtown beautification and safety projects, and we're just help fund the organization because we do a lot. And there's more information on our website, downtownjuno.org. But the tournament is this Saturday at Cope Park. It's right now, I think we have room for 20 or so more teams. So those of you that signed up, you already have a really good chance at winning the grand prize, which is $1,000 cash.
Wow.
Well, actually, it's a check.
Okay. But, but it's $1,000.
$1,000. And so, yeah, hopefully we can fill out the roster. We got room for 64 teams. So please sign up. Wow. It's going to be a great event. You can register online at the Jack Box office.
And is it rain or shine?
It is rain or shine. The weather's looking a little rainy right now, but I'm optimistic that it's not going to be a torrential downpour. And also, we have the Juneau Economic and Development Council has a slew of 10x10 tents that they're letting us use for the event. And there will be coverage on or near every single court. So when you're not throwing, you can stay out of the rain if there is any. And
I think cornhole is fun enough that I would go out in the rain to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said this is an annual event?
Well, it's sort of I don't think that we are allowed to call it an annual quite yet. Because the company I work for, Alaska Fish and Chips Company at the Flight Deck, that restaurant in the wharf, we started playing cornhole on the weekends in summer of 2016. And then we had a big end of this cornhole season celebration with the big tournament at Marine Park Plaza in September of 2016. And that was just a ton of man hours and labor to pull off. And we wanted to do it last year, but we just couldn't. We were just so busy and burnt out. So it's great that the Downtown Business Association is taking it on. And as a board member, I'm helping along with that transition.
That's great. And you can enter on the website and find out more information on the website?
Correct. Just go to the Jack Box office. It's jahc.org.
Terrific. And what time does it start again?
Registration and warm-ups start at noon, and the first round is at 1 p.m. sharp.
This Saturday at Cope Park.
Yes, sign up now.
Great. Well, Charlie, thank you so much for being here and for playing my game of cornhole trivia and for telling us all about the Southeast Alaska Cornhole Tournament and getting everybody excited. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about while you're here?
Well, I would also just a plug for a concert that's coming up on Tuesday, July 3rd. Clinton Fearon and the Boogie Brown Band, a great reggae band from Seattle and Jamaica, is coming to Juneau. It's going to be Tuesday, July 3rd at Pier 49 downtown. And it's going to be one of the biggest bands to come to Juneau since Trampled by Turtles. So I think it should be a great event, and everyone should go to that as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that information. I hadn't heard about that concert, so that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, hope to see you there.
Yes, I think I certainly will be. All right, thanks for being here today, Charlie.
Thank you.
Everybody used to call me unathletic, and granted, my vertical leap was still pretty pathetic. But now I'm the champion on the tailgate scene. 8 bags, 2 boards, 2 holes, that's all I need. Most sports require all sorts of skills, but I prefer the ones I can do while consuming meals. You gotta try it before you knock it. Try to name another sport to top it, when you can win with an open cold one in your back pocket. Singing cornhole,
cornhole,
good for your soul. Cornhole,
cornhole,
an Olympic sport by 2024. We don't remember the score, but we're happy to start all over, because it means we get to cornhole more.
Cornhole!
Who would have thought that a couple of guys could contribute so much to the greater good just by cutting a little old hole in a piece of plywood?
There's a void in my soul, shaped like
my brother, cause there's always a scrimmage. I'm tailgating, party making, I'm throwing my sacks and there's no way. This has got to be the greatest sport ever invented. There's a hole over there, I'ma throw my bag in it. The cornhole.
Support comes from The Prospector, featuring Pups at The Prospector, where dogs are welcome to join their owners at the Prospector Bar outdoor seating area. Pups at The Prospector is 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. every Thursday, located downtown on Whittier Street.
This is Bird Note. If you've ever been stung, you'll agree that it's wise to respect wasps and bees. Watch stinging insects with a keen eye, but from a safe distance. Birds like summer tanagers also watch bees and wasps with a keen eye. But that's because they plan to eat them. The summer tanager snatches bees and wasps in midair as they buzz about. Bug in beak, the bird flies to a perch, slams the insect against a branch until it's dead, then wipes it against the branch to remove the stinger before eating it. Wasp larvae are also featured on the summer tanager's menu. After chasing off or killing the adult wasps attending a nest, a tanager tears open the delicate paper-like structure and devours the larvae within. While stinging insects are a central part of their diet, tanagers also hunt grasshoppers, beetles, dragonflies, and spiders. Fruits and berries become important in their diet in late summer, during migration, and where they winter in Central and South America. But when the birds return each spring to their breeding range in the southeast, lower Midwest, and southwest, bees and wasps once again face their nemesis in the summer tanager. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
It's about 29 minutes to the top of the hour, and I'm here with my next guest, Lieutenant Craig Campbell from the Juneau Police Department. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and you're on the show, A Juneau Afternoon, for the very first time.
That's correct.
All right. Well, hope this goes well. And you said you worked for the Juneau Police Department for a while now, yeah?
Yes. In August, it's going to be 16 years.
Oh, wow. So this is not your first 4th of July here in Juneau.
Nope. I've attended all 16 of them in the past 16 years.
Wow. So you came in today because the police department wanted to talk to folks about police deployment and general safety on the 3rd and 4th of July, which is coming up next Tuesday and Wednesday. So what are some of the main things you'd like folks to know about?
Generally, we as a police department try to have a lot of extra officers working during the night of the 3rd and during the parade, downtown Juneau Parade and Douglas Parade, just because there's a lot more people during that time. And because if you have a lot more people around, you generally have more calls for service that come into the police department, probably more specifically during the night of the 3rd. So we have an increased police presence in the downtown core area where we see this high collection of people.
What are some of the most common calls that you get around this holiday?
So probably our number ones that we're going to start getting is fireworks complaints. So fireworks complaints typically happen really late at night. You see a lot of them going up on the 3rd and the 4th because people get fireworks. Fireworks are a lot of fun. But there are times when you can use fireworks and sometimes when you're not allowed to use fireworks. Specifically on the night, the days of July 3rd, 4th, and 5th, you can set off fireworks from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. that morning. But after 1 a.m., there's no fireworks. From 1 a.m. to 10 a.m. that day, no fireworks. So it's really important that people obey those rules, get it out of their system, but and then try to stop after that time because I think we all understand that the 3rd and 4th of July is, we're used to seeing fireworks, but at some point, okay, enough is enough. It's too late in the evening. And so what happens is we get a lot of calls from neighborhoods saying, hey, it's really loud. It's scaring my pets. It's I can't sleep. And that's when we get lots of extra calls for service. And it really ties up police resources. So when we might be trying to do something, whether it's look for DWI drivers, we're instead having to go talk to people about fireworks.
I see. Any other behaviors apart from setting off fireworks after 1 a.m. that you'd really like people to avoid this year?
A lot of our calls in generally for police work is going to be related to alcohol, usually overconsumption. So if you are going to consume alcohol, try to do it without getting intoxicated so you're still making good decisions, have designated drivers, and just be safe.
Are there any local resources that you'd recommend for folks who just want to have a safe and fun holiday celebration?
I can't think of a resource, no.
Okay. Just everything in moderation. All right. Also, downtown gets a little crazy because of all the traffic in the parking. Is there any parking or traffic tips that you want to share with the folks?
Just find somewhere that you can legally park. If it's not somewhere you would normally park on a regular day of the week, you're probably not allowed to park there. That means you can't park in the median on Egan Drive. You can't park on the sidewalk. That's still against the law. So really obey those laws. Just because it's the 3rd and 4th and there's not a whole lot of parking doesn't mean you can create your own parking spots. So,
can we still use the lots that are available, the city, the municipal parking lots?
All of those are still available with one exception. The parking lot directly in front of the downtown transit center, that is usually blocked off on the night of the 3rd and the morning of the 4th during the parade for police parking only. And they do that because there's so many police resources on during those times that we need places to park patrol vehicles and for those people to park.
That makes sense. Yeah. And we focus a lot on downtown for the 3rd of July since the fireworks happened there, but events are happening all over town. Is there anything you want to discuss about the parade on Douglas or things happening in the valley?
For the valley, it's usually pretty calm during that time. even the night of the 3rd and the 4th, because everybody's downtown. The biggest thing you see out there is fireworks and then a lot of DWI calls, because sometimes people drink too much and they decide they're going to drive. So just, you know, keep those things in check. Be safe. Don't drink and drive. And if you go to Douglas for the parade and festivities over there, just allow yourself a lot of extra time because traffic gets pretty congested.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything else you want to share about the 3rd and 4th of July safety and police deployment?
You know, nothing that I can think of.
I think we've covered it pretty well. And is the best place for more information the website, your website, Juneau Police Department?
I don't believe there's any specific information regarding the 3rd and 4th, but the city does put out a press release regarding activities leading up to the 3rd and 4th. So they'll let them know, like, you know, are the buses running, you know, what's closed, what's right. open, times of the parade. So they should be expecting a news release from the city shortly.
I believe you're right yeah. about that. We usually get one of those, too. All right. Well, is there anything else happening with the Juneau Police Department? Any other news or events you'd like to share?
You know, the other thing, one thing I would like to share, just to, since we're on the radio and you might be able to reach a lot more people. In the past year, the Juneau Police Department partnered with some community businesses and citizens regarding a new online bike registration program called Garage 529. Previously, we had a registration program through the police department. It was all done through paperwork. And we found that by partnering with this online program, we as citizens in the community can register bikes a lot faster. It's a lot more convenient. And we have found that it is a very successful program. So if you have a bike, I would suggest and you can either get it online through a link from the Juneau Police Department's website or just go to garage529.com. There's even an app on the iPhone and I believe Android, and you can register your bikes through that service. And it's a great service, and I would recommend that to everybody who owns a bike.
And that's just to help you recover your bike if it gets stolen?
Yeah, correct. One, so if your bike does get stolen, you can give that information to the police. So that's one of the biggest things we deal with when someone reports a stolen bike is they don't know their make, model, serial number. Serial number is probably one of the most important parts in recovering a bike and getting back to the owner. But the app on their phone allows you to take pictures of your bike, the serial number of the bike, you know, yourself with your bike, and it keeps that. So if there's ever any argument of, you know, hey, whose bike that is, you'd be able to get that information off of your off the website and give that to the police department. It has one other great app, too, is if your bike gets stolen, you can hit an alert function on that alerts other members who use that same system that, hey, help me be on the lookout for my bike. So now you have bicyclists within the community might be more aware of what's going on. It can help you look for that bike and hopefully get it returned to you.
That sounds like an excellent app. I'm sure that helps you guys out a lot, too.
It does. It's really great.
Is bike theft a problem here in Juneau?
You know, it all depends. Last year, we had quite a bit of problem with bike theft, and the year before. This year, we've seen a little bit of a downturn in bike theft, but anytime as, you know, the weather starts getting nicer, people are out riding bikes, you start to see a little bit more bike theft. But this year, it's actually down a little bit from last year.
Does a bike lock deter that kind of thing?
Bike locks definitely deter it, but they're not going to be always preventing all types of theft. There are some pretty crafty criminals we've seen who can get a bike lock cut or opened.
All right. Well, that's really good information. One more time, what was the name of that app?
It's called Garage 529.
Okay, great. So get your bikes registered on Garage 529. And, well, thank you, Lieutenant Campbell, for coming in today. Is that all you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think so.
Will you be back next month for another update?
If they want me to back, I'll be back. I'll come back. But
I hope you have a safe and fun 3rd and 4th of July.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Don't think me.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and to prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services, located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Stephanie Andrew and Sam Bornstein from Juno Makerspace. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Actually, Stephanie, welcome for the first time.
Thank you.
Sam's been here before. He's an old hat.
So Not that old.
Sorry, Sam. So you're here to talk about some events happening at Juno Makerspace. But first, could you please say a little bit about the Makerspace for those who don't know what it is?
Sure, yeah. Juno Makerspace is a organization that provides space and equipment for Juno that for anyone who wants to work on projects and doesn't have their own shop space set up in their home. We've got lots of tools and equipment such as wood shop equipment that anyone who's a member can come in and use. And we're excited to be announcing that we're expanding from just wood shop tools and a few electronics to our new location. We're going to have a much larger setup with multiple shop spaces. We're going to have an electronics lab, a craft room, ceramics studio, the wood shop, of course, and eventually a kitchen will be in there, and a small or a large, for compared to the rest of the building, a performance slash classroom space. So all this stuff is going to be in our new location. It's on Douglas. We're just half a mile north of the roundabout. I know some people are like, oh, Douglas, it's so far away. But we're really close to the bridge. So
it's good that you mentioned that. Reassure everybody. That's really amazing. I mean, last time you were here and I interviewed you, the Makerspace was not quite as complicated.
Yeah. We're moving up in the world here. We were at this one-room garage space over in the Lemon Creek area. We had all our like wood shop equipment right next to the electronics. We had the 3D printer breathing in sawdust from the table saw there. Oh. But they're now on opposite rooms of the building, and we've got quite a bit expanded setups for everything. So yeah, we've got not just the 3D printer, but the laser cutter, and now a few computers for the start of our computer lab. It's all set up.
That's really something. What motivated you to start a makerspace in the first place?
I knew it was something this community would use. It's we're definitely becoming part of the community here. It's the kind of go-to place for if someone needs a piece of equipment or has a project they want to work on that they can't quite do themselves. We're the place you go to, and I knew Juno is such a creative community that this was definitely something that would take fast here. Makerspaces in general are kind of a growing movement across the country. A few weeks ago, I went to a conference down in Santa Fe that was a national makerspace conference.
Awesome.
And so it was really great to meet people from all over the country with all sorts of different makerspaces and share with them about Juno Makerspace.
Did you expect it to be where you are from where you started so quickly?
No, I mean, it's amazing how much it's grown, how much support we've had from the community. We've had so much of our, even just our equipment has been donated. And it's really good stuff that people said, oh, you know, this has been my garage and I've been, you know, I got it because I was going to use it. But now, you know, I want the rest of the community to be able to use it. Yeah,
exactly.
Stephanie, what's your role at Makerspace?
I'm on the board and I'm do some of the marketing and communications, and I'm just excited about Makerspace and creating this community collaborative creative space that we're trying to foster more creativity in the community and give people access to equipment and space, physical space, where they can follow whatever creative vision they have to fruition and make it happen.
What are some examples of things or projects that are going on at the Makerspace? What are people coming in to work on?
Well, right now, we're mostly working on making the Makerspace, which is always
right.
A fun
thing.
We
just took over a 6,000 square foot space, so it's huge and it's amazing. And we have as Sam said, been able to separate out some of the different equipment and interests, I guess, that we have there. So things are more organized and centralized. And so
I mean, yeah, projects going on at the moment. I'm trying to think of like, oh, who's working on stuff in there?
We got some framing projects going on.
Yeah,
we
right,
have some crafting
right.
projects. We have a lot of like building improvement projects. So we were talking about maybe doing a workshop on how to drywall or how to do other things that would help our space and make it better, easier and better to use in the future and teach people new skills. So those are the kinds of things we're working on. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done to get our new space where we want it. But we've made a lot of progress and we got everything moved over and we're getting it all organized. So.
Yeah, yeah. So it's some bit of like how to make a table because we needed a table here and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I did. I attended a glass glass cutting and shaping workshop there last year. Mm-hmm. It was a really great time.
Yeah, and
that, it was so much easier than I thought it was going to be.
And that was in our old location. We'll hope to be able to rerun that class in our new location.
Definitely. And we're also looking for new people to partner with who want to come in and teach classes and different groups in the community who have different interests. So some of the STEM programming and like sort of more of the robotics things that Sam are into, and he can lead some of that. And then other people who have other interests and passions and want to teach them and help the community learn about those things, we want to bring those people in too and help them to create this community collective space.
Well, I really like all the diverse offerings that you guys are going to have there, and it's a great vision. And so let's get to what you came in here to talk about. There's two things that you wanted to discuss. So one of them is a drone and quadcopter workshop that's going on, and that's tomorrow night. And so why don't we start with talking a little bit about
that? Yeah, so this was kind of funny. It started as a Facebook chat thread somewhere on Facebook where there were a bunch of people in town who were like, I have this drone footage and I'm looking for other people who are interested in drones. And a whole bunch of people started commenting on this and like, oh, we should have a meetup. And so I jumped in because I'm unbiased here and said, oh, well, there's a perfect place to have a meetup for drones at Juno Makerspace. So that's how this event got started here is this grassroots community thing that just kind of like, oh, let's have a drone meetup. Okay. So we're meeting up tomorrow at 5 at the new Makerspace and we're going to fly quadcopters and drones. I've got a couple. If the weather's nice, we'll fly them outside and hope we don't crash. If it's not good flying weather, I've got a small one we can fly around inside the Makerspace because we now have the room to do that inside the Makerspace.
That's amazing. It must really be big. 6,000 square feet, that's like half of the island.
Well, and the drone workshop is the perfect example of the kind of thing we're hoping to do in the future too, which is also like be responsive to what the community wants and offer that and offer space to do that and other people who are interested in the same kind of things to gather and find a place to explore that creativity.
So the drone and quadcopter workshop tomorrow night, 5 p.m., 3915 Douglas Highway, just north of the...
Just north, half a mile, less than half a mile, depending on whose odometer you're looking at, north of the roundabout. We're up a bit of a driveway that kind of jumps out at you, so I find the best way to spot it is there's a radio tower directly across from us on the other side of the road. So look for the big radio tower sticking up, and we're directly across from that.
Is there any cost to attend this workshop?
No, it's not even
just
much
an informal
workshop. Yeah,
meetup.
It's an informal. We're going to hang out, fly stuff. If you've got a drone, bring it if you want. You don't have to. If you don't have one, you don't need to bring one. And learn what other people are using them for. I just use it as a hobby. I have some that I made at the Makerspace, and there's going to be other people there who use them professionally. So we're going to have a whole range of what drones are being used for around town, and I want to see what other people are doing with them. So it's going to be, I don't know what will happen with this. We may have some monthly drone club start up here. It would be fun, or some other or Juno Drone Racing League. That's my dream.
Well, you've already materialized one of your visions, so I think drone racing team is definitely a possibility. And drones are pretty popular around here, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you should have a pretty good turnout. And then the other thing you guys wanted to talk about was the work party, and that's to kind of help the new location get up and off the ground. So tell us about that.
We are partnering here with JEDC, who's helping us organize this. We've had several work parties at the Makerspace before, but this one, we're getting their help. We got a large donation from Valley Paint as well for paint for the inside, and we'll be painting the main hall of the Makerspace. So this main hall is going to be our kind of large classroom and performance area. It's got a stage in it that the whole building used to be a church at one point. And so, you know, it's kind of already set up for groups that want to do performances or anything like that. Just needs to be kind of painted. The walls need to be, you know, painted. So we're going to have a large work party for that. There's going to be beer and burgers provided by JEDC. I'm not providing them, so they put that in the ad, so I'm assuming they're providing them.
And that's on July 6th. Is that a Saturday?
No, it's on a Friday.
Oh, Friday.
From 2 to 6 p.m.
From 2 to 6, Friday, July 6th. Juno Makerspace.
3915 Douglas Highway.
North Douglas Highway, yes.
Okay. Anything else you guys would like to talk about while you're here? Best place to find out more information about Makerspace?
Go to our website. It's sometimes up to date. I don't think I've updated it since a few months.
I will say, not to hurt your feelings or anything, I checked out the website today and it is not quite up to date.
Yes. The calendar on the website is always up to date, though.
Okay, great.
That part I can promise is up to date because I can update that from my phone. It's on my Google Calendar, so sometimes it ends up with, like, call mom or something on it, which that's not a Makerspace event. But the calendar on our website is always up to date. But we also, yes, Facebook. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group, and we post our weekly updates to that, as well as an email list. So if you want to be on the email list and get our weekly newsletter through email, email junomakerspace@gmail.com. Otherwise, the Facebook page has, I think anyone can, I don't know if you need to be on Facebook to see a page.
No, you don't need to have an account. You can just look at it.
All right, great. So that's a public-facing website,
exactly.
I guess. And then we also have the Facebook group, which is we also update but weekly with the same information. But that's also for discussion if you want to try and find people who are, say, interested in drones. You can post something to our Facebook group.
Good idea. Sam and Stephanie from Juno Makerspace, thanks for being here today. The drone and quadcopter workshop is tomorrow evening, Thursday, 5 p.m. at 3915 Douglas Highway. And the work party, co-sponsored by JEDC, is July 6th, Friday, 2 to 6 p.m., beer and burgers provided. Thank you both for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you.
Glad to have you on. Thanks for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Juno Family Promise will tell us about Fabulous Family Fun Day, and you can get our weekly update on Juno Public Library activities. We'll hear about the next Author's Talk by Daniel Lee Henry and find out all about this weekend's arts and culture activities on Arts Up. Tonight at 7 p.m., tomorrow at 7 p.m., Thursday evening, tune in to KTOO for the Mudroom Sampler, highlights from the 2017-2018 season of Storytellers. If you'd like to be on a Juno afternoon, go to ktoo.org and click Contact Us. And don't forget, we're on our summer schedule through August with live shows Wednesday through Fridays and special programming on Mondays and Tuesdays. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. If you missed it, it was a fun one. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.